Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 27th of October. It's all things political, and we're about a week away from the presidential election, which is unbelievable. We've been talking about this election for a long, long time, and those of you who listen to this program are prepared. We welcome your phone calls as we look at all aspects of the presidential race and Senate races, congressional races this hour. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We'll have two guests with us the first hour. John Judas is going to join us momentarily, senior editor and writer for the New Republic. And a little bit later, Hillary Rosen will be joining us. Hillary is a CNN contributor and political director and Washington editor at large for HuffingtonPost.com. So we have much to talk about. We'll start with John, senior editor at the New Republic, has been a contributor since 1982. He has written a number of books, including The Paradox of American Democracy, Elite Special Interests, and The Betrayal of the Public Trust, William F. Buckley, Patron Saint of the Conservatives, Grand Delusion, Critics and Champions of the American Century, and he writes on politics, and we welcome him to the air, the first half hour of the program. Hillary Rosen joining us the second half hour. John Judas, hello. Thanks so much for being with us. Hi. Nice to have you here. It's hard to believe. It's a week away. I'm over the top. I realized over the weekend, it's a little slower on the weekends. I don't go to the websites 5 times a day. I do it maybe 3 times a day, and last night I figured, what the heck am I going to do when this is over? I don't know. I guess a lot of people are that way, huh?
Well, I have to write a book that I kept postponing because the election was so interesting. But that's the – so I have something I have to do. But
good. Good. Well, let's look at where we are. I was interested in a piece in Politico over the weekend that in order to change the outcome of this election, that McCain needs to change the dialogue and drive home a consistent theme and message about his leadership and readiness, and then contrast that with the message of change that Obama has so compellingly offered. Can he change the dynamic here? Does he need to change the message and really concentrate on his leadership and readiness?
I hate to get into this prediction stuff, but I don't see right now how McCain can turn the election around. I think that the errors that he made in choosing Palin and then in responding so lamely to the financial crisis, the contrast between him and Obama in the debates has set in motion a momentum that it's going to be very hard for him to stop. I just don't see it. I'd have to speculate that there was this enormous wellspring of racial prejudice that will just come about in the last on election day and undermine Obama's chances. That's the only. I mean, you'd have to kind of bring a deus ex machina, if I could put it that way, on radio into the scene in order to convince me that McCain could turn the election around at this point.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me to believe, or maybe this is just wishful thinking on my part, that maybe we're a little bit beyond race in this election, which is an extraordinary thing to say.
I think if you look at a state like Kentucky, where Obama's way behind, we're not, and where the Democratic nominee for senator might upset Mitch McConnell, I would say in that case that if a white guy was running for the Democratic nomination, he'd be winning. He'd be leading in Kentucky, I think you can see still evidence of that race plays a factor, but I think it's being trumped by the economy.
Mm-hmm. We can't really second guess this, but it is interesting to play with the idea or the question, what if McCain had chosen somebody else as his running mate? What if he had chosen, Olympia Snowe or Pawlenty from Minnesota, or I don't know about Lieberman, but do you think he's second-guessing himself if he made the decision to do this? I guess he did ultimately, but if he went somewhere else with this. She doesn't seem to be working out very well.
I they'll have to figure this out when they write the books about McCain's campaign, but I think it was one of the stupidest decisions that I've ever seen by a presidential candidate. I just can't imagine what I guess they were thinking that they couldn't run on this against Obama's mantra of change, and they couldn't use experience versus change. What you hear sometimes is that they were looking at the Hillary Clinton campaign and comparing themselves to that, but Hillary started doing very well in the end of the primaries on the running on both experience and having an economic program. So if McCain had something to say about the economy and he ran on his experience and he had a vice presidential candidate who could possibly threaten Obama in certain states, for instance, Pawlenty in Minnesota, putting Minnesota in play and perhaps helping in Wisconsin too, you know, I think he would have been better off. I don't know whether he would have been competitive right now, whether he could have won, but you wouldn't have these voters who are making their decisions primarily on the basis of his choice of Palin. I just come across in my own acquaintance people who tell me that they voted for Republican presidential candidates their whole life, and this time they're not going to, and it's because of his choice of Palin and what it showed about his judgment. So I think it was a daffy moment, and I think it showed to a lot of people that McCain actually wasn't presidential material, that there was something missing in the guy, that in a way he was too quirky.
The Times piece yesterday, the New York Times Sunday Magazine, had this lengthy article about McCain and all his different presentations of who he is. You know, I was struck, the more I think about this, and maybe this is too simplistic, but it seems to me as though, because I can't understand any other reason for picking her other than she looks good. And then we get this whole, let's make her look even better and make the clothes a little bit tighter and wear the black, you know, boots that they have high heels on them. And two of his closest advisors intimated that that was a consideration. You know, you put her on Time magazine, she looks good.
I think they got obsessed with the idea of celebrity. I suppose that was why they thought they... It was the other side of their attacking Obama for celebrity. I guess that on the other side of hatred is envy, and in this case, they wanted their own celebrity. And I think if you look at the initial reaction to Palin, it was based on her good looks and celebrity, and I think you find a lot in the opinion polls, and it always misleads. People, including people in the press, that when you get somebody like Palin, the initial reaction is always a very favorable. It was inevitable as the election neared, unless she showed some kind of command of the issues that people were going to get worried about the choice and about her experience. It's just Americans aren't that stupid. They had to be reassured about Obama, and they would have had to be reassured about Palin, and they weren't. But the initial reaction focused on the celebrity, and I think that the McCain people, a lot of whom come out of the Bush campaign, which was an exercise in superficiality, were impressed by that and thought that they could help McCain through her good, you know, through creating a you know, a good-looking celebrity.
They brought in all these consultants, makeup consultants and hair consultants and clothing consultants, and evidently brought in a speech coach as well, who changed the cadence of the way she speaks. But after 8 years of people making fun of the way George Bush has been speaking and jokes about that continually, I don't think they brought in enough people to work on her command of language. Maybe I'm fussy about this, but it seems to me... Are you at all? It just drives me crazy.
One of my fellow editors at the New Republic, Chris Orr, wrote that in fact she might have ended up being an interesting and attractive national figure, but in a sense she was overcoached. And I'm not saying that on a vice that she could have ever been a convincing vice presidential candidate. But I think that, in the end, they took away a lot of the qualities, her qualities that could have appealed to liberals as well as conservatives. I mean, again, if you think back to August before she was ever nominated, and having somebody like that at an interview show, you say, "Oh, how interesting!" You know, and this is a kind of interesting person, and to be the governor, and so. But by the end, she becomes kind of a laughing stock and a lightning rod for all of people's fears about the right wing ignorance taking over the world. So
does she put any state in play that would not have gone Republican anyway? And simultaneously, what about Joe Biden? Does he put any state in play?
She gives the Republicans Alaska. Alaska might have been competitive without her because of the scandals surrounding the Congress and congressional and Senate. Republican senator in Alaska. So that's, what is it, 2-3 electoral votes? Doesn't matter. Biden was not important for any particular state, but he was important for voters' general judgment and estimation about Obama, that he was a serious guy, that he was really thinking about what it would be like to be president, and what it would be like if he died in office, and who would replace him, and it showed a real contrast between Obama and McCain. So I think it helped generally. I don't think there was any particular state that it brought into play.
Do you think that too much was made of Joe Biden's, mark my words, he's going to be tested? Did the Republicans use that to their advantage fairly well? Does he have a tendency to say things again that he needs to be careful about? Or did we make too much of those comments?
Yes, to the latter. He's constantly saying these things. There are always these, they're the classic gaffes, which is there's always truth in them. It's not like he's saying something that's stupid or obviously wrong. Usually what he's saying is makes sense, but he should politically have kept his mouth shut. But I think, again, I think that that's just, those are just minor incidents right now. I don't think it makes that much difference.
We're going to welcome phone calls, and we'll take them momentarily. Our number, it's All Things Political, as we've been doing on Monday mornings for a long time at 9 o'clock. And our guest the first half hour is John Judas, senior editor at The New Republic. He's been a contributor since 1982, and we're welcoming phone calls for him or emails. Our lines are all filled right now, but just keep trying. Our number is 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, it's talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now, and let's start our calls with Bruce from Milwaukee. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having John on. He's got a wonderful perspective. I have two concerns. One is the subtext of race in the context of Wisconsin, and the second is his comment about the Republican right ignorance. In terms of the subtext of race, there was an election here with Lena Taylor running for Milwaukee County Executive, and then the Supreme Court Justice Butler, both of whom lost. And the weekend before that election, what was in the mail was this postcard with a fetus on it that said, "Democrats kill babies. Democrats will raise your taxes. Democrats are leftist liberals." And my fear is that these tactics will come out again and somehow spike and skew these polls. So what we have believing may happen with Obama will not. The second concern I have is with these ignorant Republicans. I live next to somebody who is a plumber, and he, of 25 houses on this street, there are 5 with Obama signs and 1 with a McCain sign in front of his yard. There are about 6 signs in his yard, which violates all the zoning ordinances about signs. But this man, to me, represents this simmering undercurrent of ignorance about the issues. And, this guy's wife dresses like Sarah Palin. And so there's this huge constituency, I think, out there that is clueless and brainless, and I fear that they're going to skew this and give us four more years of hell.
John?
Well, you're a good person to give money to Obama. I think they're worried that that people are going to become too complacent. So it's probably welcome to hear somebody who's really worried about the election. My neighboring state of Virginia, there's been a lot of attempts to scare people to death about the election. There was a mailer sent out by the Virginia Republican Party that had a picture of a guy who looked like Obama with evil on the cover of it. So in terms of those last-minute messages about the guns and abortion and terrorists and stuff like that, I think that the last minute has been going on for about the last month. So far, without any dramatic effect on the polls. I think if you want to look at a place where it'll probably succeed, maybe West Virginia, where the National Rifle Association has been on the radio almost every minute with ads about how Obama's going to take your guns away. But I still think that that's not. Again, I think we're in the last minute already, and you haven't seen any dramatic effects. So, barring some incredible revelation, I don't see a change on that. There's ignorance on all sides of the electorate, right wing and left wing in the country. But there is a kind of backlash mood, very much that you see in some of the McCain and Palin rallies. And the thing about it is, it's intensified by the fact that it's so small. I think, and I know this is somebody who was part of the left in the 60s and 70s and saw our ranks becoming diminished and people becoming, in effect, more hysterical as you become more irrelevant. And I think that that's what's happening on the Republican right.
Mm-hmm. E.J. Dionne had an interesting comment over the weekend that conservatism has finally crashed on problems for which its doctrines offered no solutions, the economic crisis, but this referring to what we were just talking about, on its refusal to acknowledge, and I wonder if you agree with this, that the real America is more diverse, pragmatic, and culturally moderate than the place described in Palin's speeches or imagined by right-wing talk show hosts.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I wrote a book with a guy named Rui Teixeira in 2002 called The Emerging Democratic Majority that's still in your bookstores if you want to get it. It's in paperback. That's about the demographic trends in the country and how those were eventually going to lead to a majority. And again, if you want a good example, look at my neighboring state of Virginia, where Northern Virginia professionals and large numbers of immigrants have completely, and also people who didn't necessarily grow up in the South but migrated there, has transformed that state into a Democratic state. They're going to have two Democratic senators, a Democratic governor, and I expect that it'll go for Obama. So yeah, the country has been changing, and the change really began in the late 80s, but it was delayed to some respects by the 2001, by September 11th, and the popular reaction to that, and the extent to which the Bush people could exploit it. You're seeing the full force of it now.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Bruce, for your call. Wayne is next from Holman. Hi, Wayne.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Morning, Wayne.
I appreciate your guest. I guess I'll be going to be classified as one of those ignorant Republicans, but that's okay. I think we need to have different choices in this country, and that's what makes this country great. But my question to the guest was, I listened to an interview with a CNN reporter, a gentleman, who interviewed Sarah Palin and was quoting, he said, someone who had stated that Sarah Palin is ignorant and stupid, and he listed about five or six kind of nasty commentaries directed at her, and Sarah Palin asked him who wrote that. And the guest wouldn't reply. The guest, again, is a CNN reporter. What the guest failed to mention was that it's a conservative who said that, but the conservative said that certain liberal groups have said you are this, this, and this, and this. And he kind of left that part out. And CNN, you folks apologized to the author of those comments, but didn't apologize to Sarah Palin, and I'm wondering why you didn't.
He's not from CNN. Our next guest is from CNN, Wayne. But I'm interested in asking you.
I have nothing to do.
Yeah, right.
CNN.
So he's off the hook on it. You can ask her. Do you like her? Do you like Sarah Palin, Wayne?
Well, you know, maybe it's a backlash on my part. I think she's just been called some of the most awful things between her and her family, and I think she's a pretty bright lady. Now, I'm pro-life, and I'm staunch Second Amendment supporter, and mm-hmm. so I Obama is a challenging, interesting, and he quite frankly stopped me dead in my tracks when I first heard him, Kathleen. Mm-hmm. I think he's a charming man who has great oration skills, but I guess I'm leaning toward more McCain and Palin because I'm one of those dumb Republicans, I guess, but I think Mr. Obama is just a very sharp guy. I just disagree with him.
All right. Thanks, Wayne, so much for your call.
Sorry, I got that wrong.
No, that's all right. Let's go to Ken from Milton. Hi, Ken.
Hello. Your guest said that he doesn't know how McCain can win the election, and my concern is that 27 states are using Republican and Diebold Republican voting machines, and that's a problem that has really not been dealt with. But what I would like to know is who will be occupying the offices closest to the president and the White House.
Okay. Somebody had a piece on that. What first, do you think, worry about voting irregularities next week, John?
Oh, yes, there will be voting irregularities, but some of them will be mechanical and some will be political. I hope they'll be more mechanical than political. I'm not somebody who was ever convinced that the election was stolen in 2004, so I've never been into those discussions that much, and I'm not a good person to ask about it.
Mm-hmm. And what about who's going to who Obama would surround himself with in the White House? Who McCain would? Do you have confidence they both would put the best minds there?
Well, I think that you have to go back to the Sarah Palin choice. I think that choice raised certain questions about what kind of administration McCain would run. I am somebody who wrote favorably about McCain in the past, so I don't have to I don't have to apologize, I think, for my views being sectarian or factional. I'm not convinced that he could run an administration, and that he would pick the right people, and if he picked the right people, he would listen to them. I have much more confidence in that respect with Obama. I was always worried with Obama's experience, and I still am. And I think that Biden's statement is not goofy. I think people will test him, and the way they tested John Kennedy. He's going to have to pass those tests. But what he's shown me in this election has given me some confidence that he'll pass.
Thanks, John, so much for being with us.
Sure.
John Judas, senior editor at The New Republic. He is author of The Paradox of American Democracy, Elites, Special Interests, and the Betrayal of Public Trust, William F. Buckley, Patron Saint of the Conservatives, and Grand Illusion, Critics and Champions of the American Century. Joining us momentarily, as soon as we get her on the phone, Hillary Rosen, political director and editor-at-large for TheHuffingtonPost.com and CNN political contributor. She is also the former chair and chief executive officer of the Recording Industry Association of America, the trading group representing the U.S. sound recording industry, where she served for 17 years before retiring in June of 2003. A reminder to you that we're going to be at Marquette University this final week before the election for a live broadcast Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at the Marquette University Alumni Memorial Union, and there will be a reception to follow, including chocolate cake from 11 to 11:30. It's called Your Vote, Your Future. We'll have people from the campaigns. We'll have journalists with us and political analysts and also students, of course. That's why we're going to Marquette. So join us if you'd like. We just want to know how many people will be there. The admission is free. Registration is required. Call 414-227-2047. 414-227-2047. For you to join our conversation, and we welcome you, and I think we're going to have a great time. Then it will only be a few days before the election, so the political talk will be hot and heavy on Thursday. And is Hillary with us now? Hillary Rosen is with us now, and we're happy to have her here. Hi, Hillary. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Great, thanks.
Are you going nuts this week?
It's pretty exciting.
Is it?
Oh, yeah.
Do you spend the week before this being an analyst here with almost no sleep?
Well, I spend months before every election sort of with this cold-hearted, calculating view on what the options and opportunities are. And then I think in, like, the last, you know, week before Election Day, this kind of liberal washes over me where I just, you know, this euphoria where I always think we're going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, so I have the euphoria, but who knows?
Mm-hmm. I know that you, was it easy for you to make the change from, I know you were a Hillary Clinton supporter and I watched you endorse her many, many times on the air. Was it hard for you to make a change to be a supporter of Barack Obama?
It really wasn't. I was never an Obama opponent. I've admired him for a long time. And there were, you know, always a lot of things about him I admired. Starting at the outset, frankly, with his message. I mean, I've lived in Washington for 30 years, and this is a town that needs change badly. And I just thought he nailed that early on, not in a sort of rhetorical, campaigny kind of way, but really in a thoughtful, political, grounding way. And but look, Senator Clinton is somebody I've known a very long time. I've admired a very long time. I think she'd make a great president. And, you know, it's too bad we couldn't elect both of them.
Mm-hmm. In a blog you wrote, I don't know if this is out of date yet, things become out of date in a hurry, but you talk about, and I'm wondering if this still holds true, that McCain has lost his final opportunity to convince 30 million people to change their mind about their support for Barack Obama. The polls, as you know, and this is the week that we do pay some attention to the polls, he has to actually change minds now for him to win. There aren't enough undecided voters.
Right.
How would he go about doing that this week? Can he do that this week, Hillary?
Well, I said that right after the final debate, which was the last time he was going to have an audience that big at a single time. And, you know, people can say what they want about whether or not debates matter. But the fact is you get a really large audience who is focusing on the race at that moment. And for an undecided voter, you have very little control over what other times they'll choose to dial in, you know, and pay attention or when they won't. So that's why I think debates matter. I think for John McCain, he has gone through a kind of public identity crisis in this campaign that he can't recover from. The only thing I sad to say that could elect him president right now are some outside forces, either, you know, a massive screw up on the Obama campaign's part, which does not seem likely in my view,
mm-hmm.
or some other outside forces, and I just don't know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that he, you know, people have started to tune out his message.
We spent some time the first half hour talking about, don't we always, Sarah Palin. I know that you've written about her. What do you think? I'm beginning to think, as I said earlier, that part of the big reason they chose her was they thought that she was attractive. I'm trying to figure out some other reason. I know she's supposed to be this maverick, but she doesn't speak very well. She just doesn't. And she doesn't come off as being particularly smart in a time when I think we're looking, perhaps, because we have so many problems. And then you look at the outfits and the boots and all this, and the Times magazine article yesterday had me thinking, maybe they thought it was because she was good looking. What do you think? Am I being too simplistic about this?
Well, not necessarily. I clearly believe that one of the major reasons he chose her is because she's a woman. And the fact that she's an attractive woman, I mean, let's face it, female candidates have there's a double standard for female candidates anyway. They have to look more attractive than male candidates tend to need to look anyway. But the fact that she's a woman, I think, appealed to John McCain. I think at the time he was making his decision, there was still a reluctance among, 25% of Hillary Clinton voters to get on the Obama bandwagon. And I actually think that McCain thought that, wrongly, that he had a shot at those voters if he, put a woman on the ticket. I think that she has been a disappointment in a number of areas, but not so much the areas that people have said. I, for one, said the day she was selected that the experience issue didn't bother me that much. I actually was a young woman who a bunch of old white guys took a chance on and gave a job to that no young woman had ever had.
So was I.
And so how do you get that shot unless you're given it? So that piece didn't bother me so much. I just thought that she was so fundamentally simplistic and wrong on the key issues that the country cared about. We've moved beyond the social issues as being determinative in our politics. And yet that was such a primary area of focus for her and the McCain campaign, to bring the so-called evangelicals and Christian conservatives to the table.
Mm-hmm.
But, they're important in the Republican primary, but in a general election, they're 25% of the general electorate. Most people don't want to pick their president anymore based on sort of those sorts of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And with regard to other issues, I think there was just she didn't bring anything to the table. Her reformist experience was quite empty, if you looked at it even at the time. And I think that McCain was trying to gloss over his, experience mantra with a kind of change reformist message that ended up just making him look like he didn't know who he was. And mm-hmm. I think he hasn't recovered since.
Yeah. You do have to wonder if he'd been running somewhat like the John McCain of 2000 and had somebody else in the vice presidential slot. I'm not sure who, but it seems that the number of other people would have done him better this go around. He might be doing a whole lot better. Do you think?
I think he would be doing better. I think if he had, there was a moment where a vice presidential pick might have helped him more. If he had picked somebody like Mike Bloomberg or even potentially Mitt Romney, he might not have had the meltdown during the economic crisis that he had.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as a practical matter, he has just been too closely associated with George Bush over the last 4 years. And this was his decision. After 2000, he said, all right, what do I need to do to win? And what he was focused on was, what do I need to do to win a Republican primary? Because I think he underestimated his independence brand and the staying power of it, and didn't realize that people, if he moved to the right and embraced George Bush and all of his policies in order to secure a Republican nomination, I think he thought that people would still see him as the maverick and independent thinker, which is how he defined himself. And I think he underestimated how tarnished his own brand became.
Let's go back to phone calls. Hillary Rosen is our guest now, and we're doing all things political as we have for a long time, probably about a year and a half, in preparation for this election, which, hard to believe, is coming up pretty soon. Welcoming your phone calls for Hillary. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you want to send an email, that's talk@WPR.org. She, of course, you see frequently on CNN. She's a political contributor. She's editor-at-large for the Huffington Post. She was in the world of entertainment for a long time as the chief executive officer of the Recording Industry Association of America. She has worked for Senator Bill Bradley and served as the transition director in 92 for then newly elected U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein, and also served as Washington rep when Feinstein was mayor of San Francisco. Back to phone calls, and let's go to Paul from Clintonville. Hi, Paul.
Good morning, Kathleen, and you're a good guest. Whoops, I'm sorry. I dropped something in my kitchen. I hope it didn't hear away, sir.
It's all right.
I was curious about something. You guys have pretty much stolen my thunder on Sarah Palin, which is fine. Yeah, you covered a lot of ground I was curious about. But there is one thing that troubles me, and maybe at a future show or something, it'd be more to the point. If not, tackle it now. The makeup of these political campaigns, are they people just selected from within the hierarchy of the respective parties, that type of thing? I mean, it seems like they're going to be the brightest and best that you can get hold of. Yet I see this business with, especially with Sarah Palin, almost being victimized by the public, as it were. And it would seem to me that the campaigns would do their homework and see what's out there on the, you know, satires or satiristic, if you want to call it, horizons, Saturday Night Live and shows like that, that they would see this kind of thing coming. And either prepare their candidates for the possibility, or just, you know, select from another person in the field, knowing that they're particularly susceptible to this kind of damage.
That's interesting.
And as would the campaign be.
Mm-hmm. And that didn't seem to happen in the case of selecting Sarah Palin, did it, Hillary?
Well, you know, there was a great analysis in the New York Times last week about the process by which she was selected. The New Yorker magazine.
Right. Yeah.
By Jane Mayer, and what it essentially said was what, you know, I had also come to learn, which was that she was on a kind of a third or fourth tier of people to consider. Maybe it's wise to sort of step back and just educate for a minute on usually how this process works, because when you go through a presidential campaign, you know, the top advisors and the candidate themselves kind of have in the back of their mind a list of people that they think ought to be considered as a VP candidate, and they sort of add and subtract to the list as the campaign goes on, based on how people are performing, whether they're willing to be good surrogates, whether they're showing loyalty, whether they're being tested in their own milieu. And people always have out-of-the-box choices on their list in the outset. It's always a leading business person or a major philanthropist or some fantastic academic. Candidates, you know, presidential candidates always want to believe that they're the first person who's going to really have, you know, a fantastic surprise pick. The problem is it always comes down to what the caller said was kind of the leading politicians of their party, because in the end, these are high-pressured moments, and you want people who have so-called been tested in by the press and by public appearances, and the kinds of people who have demonstrated message discipline over and over and over again in the course of campaigns and things. So you always end up with a much smaller list than you started out with, and almost inevitably that list is pure politicians. So I think it's pretty clear with Sarah Palin that she was on the, you know, the second or third tier of politicians, and that there wasn't much vetting beyond her initial bio, which was, you know, she knocked out a, you know, long-standing member of the Alaska political establishment and was extremely popular as a governor. But I don't think that there was the kind of research done and vetting done by talking to associates and really looking into her background that was done on other candidates.
Thank you, Paul, for your call. We go to Charlotte from Racine next. Hi, Charlotte.
Good morning.
Hello.
I was really wondering, where does all this money come from for Obama? First of all, there are almost $800 million against 86 for McCain. Do you think that is a fair fight?
It's a great question, and the irony is that it comes from more regular people than you can possibly imagine. I think at this point, less than 30% of Obama's donations have come from people giving more than $500. And That has never happened in a political campaign. That's not the McCain campaign. The McCain campaign actually has just the opposite ratio, 70% major donors and 30% small donors. This is how it happens with the Obama campaign. They don't ask most people for $1,000 or $2,300. They ask most people for $10, for $20, for $25, and that's how they've gotten it. Quick statistic. Americans will spend more money on Halloween costumes this year than they will in presidential in political campaigns. So everybody thinks there's too much money in politics, but the reality is, you know, in the grand scheme of how much people spend, it's not so much.
Is he fairly criticized though for not taking public financing?
Sure. It's totally fair criticism. He said he was going to do it, and he didn't do it. And I think it's appropriately something to factor in.
Mm-hmm. Let's welcome more phone calls, which we'll do in just a moment. Hillary Rosen is our guest this half hour of All Things Political. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up the second hour of our program today, after the news from National Public Radio, we'll be looking at the Supreme Court. The conventional wisdom is that probably three Supreme Court justices will be leaving the court over the next few years. John Paul Stevens, who's 88, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, 75, and David Souter, who's 69. And we'll be looking at the likely appointments of the Supreme Court justices and also the direction of the court. Jeffrey Toobin will be joining us, CNN legal analyst and New Yorker staff writer, author of The Nine and Inside the Secret World of the Supreme Court, and Richard Garnett will join us, a professor of law at the University of Notre Dame. Hillary Rosen here now, and we go back to your phone calls and to Katie from Toma next. Hi, Katie. Or I'm sorry, this is Katie. Hi, Katie.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Katie.
Hi, Katie.
I have a question. I'm an Obama supporter, and I was just at Walmart. And I overheard a conversation between a McCain supporter and the checkout clerk talking about a supposed Democratic lawyer who is suing Barack Obama in order to release his birth certificate, calling into question that he was born in Kenya, so therefore he's legally not even a citizen, which I guess as a Obama supporter I chalk it up to desperation. But I guess it's twofold. I haven't heard that story, and I'm a public radio CNN junkie. And two, I guess I'm wondering if somebody is born in a foreign country, but one of their parents is a American citizen. I guess I was under the assumption that automatically qualified somebody as an American citizen.
You do need to be American-born, and Barack Obama was born in Hawaii.
Right. It's just another one of those. I read that somewhere over the internet this weekend, too. It's just another one of those. Let's find something to disqualify the guy. Don't you think somebody would have found out if he were not an American citizen?
Yeah.
Isn't that a prerequisite of the job? Yeah. Thanks very much, Katie, for your call. And we go next to Jeff from Madison. Hello, Jeff.
Yes, good morning. Just a couple of comments on the choice of Palin. If John McCain had planned to run as I hate to even use the word, I'm so sick of it, maverick, then one presumes that he would be running and showing off his independent spirit, and yet the man was not even supposedly, according to all the media we've heard, able to push forward his own candidate for vice president. He had to take someone offered by the one wing of his party. So he removed his own sense of who he was with that choice. Mm. And I think people can see that he isn't whom he tries to be. And in fact, the New York Times had an interesting article yesterday on the magazine called Stumped Speech. The party itself was trying to figure out how to run the guy last June. They couldn't agree on it. That's number it just occurred to me that whole sense of who he is disappeared with that choice. Number two, I'm just wondering if that wing of the party that was pushing her was so concerned with the American people's distrust of Dick Cheney that they went, listening to your former show, Kathleen, that they went mm-hmm. for someone as far in the opposite direction as they could possibly find so that no one could worry that this might be another administration by vice president.
Anyway, interesting points. I'll Thanks, up. Jeff. Thanks for the call. Hillary, what do you think?
Well, it is an interesting point. I think that John McCain, I come to the same conclusion, but I think for a different reason. I think John McCain operates so much as a solo actor that it never occurred to him in a way, or it didn't matter to him in a way, that people would say that she wasn't qualified to run the country because he is going to run the country. And it's sort of the same way where he hasn't prepared a transition operation. It's been well reported. And, you know, friends of his joke to me, that's because he thinks he's going to run the whole government. He doesn't need anybody else. And, you know, he has said, oh, well, he thinks it's bad luck and the like. But, you know, most people historically would suggest it's irresponsible not to to plan a transition in any detail if you're running for president. Because, you know, November 5th comes quickly and, you know, January 20th comes very quickly. So I do think this is very much who John McCain is, which is kind of a solo actor thinking he always knows best.
Mm-hmm. When you think about it, Hillary, boy, the country's in a mess, isn't it? You think about the amount of money people are losing in retirement accounts and very scared about their economic future and the wars that are going on. Whoever in the world becomes president has such a huge job. They are such serious times.
Well, there is a lot at stake, and it also is, you know, the thing that I like so much about Barack Obama these days in particular is that he is not saying he's going to fix everything.
Hmm.
He's saying, I'm going to depend on the will of the American people who really want things to be better, and we're going to do some priority things first, and then we're going to get to everything else. But I don't think he is setting unreasonably high expectations. I think he's being extraordinarily smart about how much can get done and what the timetables are. And I think it's comforting to hear somebody not overpromise.
What do you think about what's going to happen with the Senate and with the House and the calls for for McCain to put more money into congressional races?
Well, the Republican Party is sort of having a war with itself right now, as many of your listeners may know about, because many people are saying that they should be taking money out of some of the battleground states where there aren't tough congressional races, like potentially in Florida or in Ohio, and put more money in places where there are tougher races, like in Georgia and in New Hampshire and some others. So I don't think this is a fight anybody's going to win. This is, you know, they're arguing over spoils that have already been spent. Most of the money and the television buys have already been done. And with a week out, the honest truth is there's very little you can do to sort of change the system. You know, these are Titanics trying to turn around in creeks when you're talking about shifting spending so late in a presidential race.
And is there something, do you think, in the next week that could change the whole dynamic here? Or are you a strong believer in most of the polls showing that this is the Democrats' election?
Well, you know, if there's one thing Democrats know how to do, it's lose elections.
Right.
So I never get too overwhelmed. But I think, you know, turnout is in the early states quite large. I think there are some early voting problems we're seeing with the hours being so reduced in Florida,
mm-hmm.
with the lines being incredibly long in North Carolina. So, you know, I still think there are potential problems. And in many of those states, and I don't want to be too paranoid or accusatory, there are Republican secretaries of state and election officials and the like. So I do think that there is still a lot that can happen that can go wrong in some of these key states. On the other hand, I sense that there is, you know, enough of a force for change here. A critical thing has happened, I think. I'll just, before our time is ending, that I'll just share. You know, for a long time, John McCain seemed like an alternative that was potentially safe, not very exciting. And that was going on at the same time as Barack Obama was getting the country more and more comfortable with him.
Mm-hmm.
We saw early polls where the biggest issue people had with Barack Obama was he came out of nowhere. He makes the joke about, you know, his funny name and being an African-American doesn't look like other presidents on dollar bills. The truth was, America really needed to understand who this guy was and see him in action.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Hillary, so much.
We're has gone on long enough that people are now comfortable with him.
With who he is. Thank you so much for being with us. I hope you'll join us again. I like your work. Hillary Rosen, many people do, who called in political director, editor-at-large for the HuffingtonPost.com and CNN political contributor. We thank her for being with us. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour and doing on-air production. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.